Hello, everyone. I'm happy to be with you this afternoon. My topic is developing and diversifying the public health nursing workforce views of online methods. And it's a nice segue to what Dr. Hunt was just describing. I'll be discussing some work that I, Marilyn O'Rourke, and my colleague, Dr. Pamela Levin, did at Rush University in Chicago. I do not have any relationships or commercial interests to disclose. However, I gratefully acknowledge the support of a HRSA grant to do the work that Dr. Levin and I did. As we've just heard, there are many challenges for public health nursing workforce development, especially developing a diversified workforce that is representative of the populations that we serve. Even before the current recession, public health nursing agencies were having trouble recruiting and retaining sufficient numbers of nurses. It is just hard to attract nurses to this specialty. Does anyone agree with that statement? Okay. And we know the wonderful work that we do that we also just heard, but again, it's hard to attract nurses to this specialty. It's especially difficult to attract sufficient numbers of minority nurses and to develop a diverse workforce. Because the percentages of underrepresented minorities nurses in the nursing profession remain small. In 2004, the Bureau of Health Professions did their most recent survey, and only 10.1% of nurses identified themselves as an underrepresented minority. However, there is hope. The first session I went to today was on healthcare reform, and I learned that two of the bills that are moving forward, the House bill and the Senate Health bill, both have language and strategies in those bills to diversify the nursing workforce and the primary care provider workforce. So there may be some help around the corner. In addition to what Dr. Hunt talked about, one strategy to recruit nurses is often continuing education. And this is helpful because it not only attracts nurses, but it attracts nurses that we need, nurses that are interested in professional growth and lifelong learning. But in many areas of the country, continuing education and formal educational programs are not readily accessible. At the same time that these challenges are occurring, there is a movement towards certification of health departments and accreditation, rather, of health departments and certification of public health nurses, both of which require additional education. Lastly, financially strapped public and community-based facilities have difficulty providing funds for continuing education and tuition programs. And this has only become worse in the current economic recession. The purpose of this presentation is to discuss the findings of two surveys conducted at Rush University College of Nursing in Chicago related to ongoing public health nursing education. We wanted to know if an online program in public health nursing could meet the educational needs of both employers and students, especially underrepresented minority students. We plan to use the information to make sure that our program was affordable, accessible, met a variety of learning styles, was attractive to diverse students, and was an effective use of limited funds. To obtain employer information, in summer of 2008, an electronic survey using SurveyMonkey was sent to selected ASTDN members. 44 surveys were returned for a 53% response rate. 61% of the respondents said that continuing education is a requirement for state licensure, although fewer agencies, 40%, made it a condition of employment. Almost three quarters, 72%, reimburse for CE expenditures. The range of support is from 2 days of paid personal time to $500. 62% of state and local agencies offered tuition reimbursement, so some funding is available. As far as educational methods go, most preferred distant learning strategies, such as webinars, which are web-based programs with live discussion or online courses. We also wanted to learn if online courses were attractive to underrepresented minority students. So we did a phone survey of students who had taken a course that was entirely online. Of the 22 participants, 12 were Black, 7 Hispanic, and 3 Caucasian. 21 were female, 1 was male, and they were predominantly alumni of the program. We believe that the findings of these phone interviews have relevance for public health nursing staff development. The students were asked to describe their learning style. Some of the students showed a strong preference for one learning style over another. For instance, 8 considered themselves visual learners, and they would say things like, "I cover my eyes and picture things, and then it comes back to me." Or, "I'm a visual learner. If my mind isn't there with audio, I fall asleep." Or, "I like to read and reread." So they definitely had a tendency toward visual learning. 4 were audio learners, and they would say things like, "I really enjoy listening to the professor. I learn by listening to lectures as opposed to reading." This is important, since some online courses and programs are almost entirely visual. They involve reading material and then writing and then reading what's written. Others have audio components, so it's important to consider the fit of the learner with the program. By far, the aspect of online studies that students liked best was the flexibility and convenience, 91%. Students liked the sense of control it gave. For instance, if they had things coming up in their personal life in the future, they liked the ability to even work ahead, see what was needed and work ahead. They liked to be able to capitalize on small units of downtime. If clients were delayed presenting at a clinic, for instance. They liked to be able to double task or to schedule their studies when they knew that they were at their personal best. They also cited some additional advantages of online studies, such as reduced commuting costs and commuting time, the need to not be concerned about childcare. The online methods also allow students to research and prepare their answers ahead of time. This allows students to really demonstrate their best work. And from a faculty standpoint, it also supports more in-depth discussion of issues. Another thing that students mentioned is that it was a more egalitarian way to participate in a class. In other words, everyone was more equal. In the classroom, you'll always have a few students that tend to dominate. But in the online environment, everyone really does have an equal chance to participate. Many also said that it was a major factor in their ability to continue working full-time while pursuing their education. So for employers, what this means is that you don't have to be concerned about your student employees leaving the workplace to attend class, nor do you have the same issues with other employees who are not students resenting the fact that they need to pick up the slack. Of course, there's a downside to everything, and the least favorite aspect of online studies for these students was that they felt it was impersonal. They felt isolated, and they said that they missed the face-to-face contact with faculty and with their student peers. Almost 50% of the students felt this way. One student said, "I felt like a monk." Another student said, "Everyone is a stranger." That one kind of wounded me a bit. So they find it difficult to feel disconnected from others. And perhaps nurses are social beings to begin with, but that definitely was a strong theme. Students were asked to rate their degree of feeling connected on a scale of 1 to 10. And all students felt more connected to others in the live classroom and more able to relate to peers and faculty in the live classroom. However, Hispanics and Caucasians expressed this to a greater degree than Blacks. So I think that is an important thing to consider, whether one's need for personal interaction is a fit for online coursework. If you have limited funds to support employees' continuing education, how do you select those who are most likely to be successful? The students feel that these characteristics are essential: to be organized, to be disciplined, to reach out to others, and to learn new behaviors. When they gave examples of how organized they were, I was pretty astounded. One example stands out. A student took folders that were color-coded. In those folders, she put all the materials for a given two-week period of work, all the readings, all the handouts, all the assignments, including photocopying the book ratings, and creating these folders, which were travel folders, that she kept with her, and when she had any small units of time, she used those folders. To me, that is a high degree of organization. As far as discipline goes, another student described creating a big poster board of when everything was due and putting it next to the television so that if she was ever tempted to watch Grey's Anatomy, instead of doing her coursework, she always had in front of her what she was supposed to be doing. Another thing that they talked about was reaching out to others and how that takes extra steps. You don't have the advantages of hallway conversations to stay on track. You need to pick up the phone or email to keep in touch with faculty or peers, but that's an important thing to learn how to do. And they also talked about how you need to learn to communicate differently. In an online environment, one doesn't see your face, they don't get your tone of voice, they don't get any of the nonverbals, so you have to make sure that your words convey what you want and they are not misunderstood. I was interested in whether any of the underrepresented minority students had embarrassing or insensitive experiences online. Of concern to me was that almost 32% of the students, or almost a third of the students, had experiences where they felt others embarrassed them. In some cases, it was faculty or peer feedback that was more public than they liked. In others, it was stereotypical comments made by other students. In most cases, equally concerning was that the students did not directly address it. They made comments like they ignored it, they thought it best to stay out of it, they didn't want to make it any worse. So I think this is important for faculty to be aware of, that they need to be alert to these kinds of situations. And as far as employers are concerned, it's probably important to model and practice good workplace electronic business communication to kind of prepare students on how to communicate with each other and also how to address incidents when they occur in a professional way. Students recommend that learners do a few things to prepare for online education. They should do a self-assessment and ask themselves questions like, is this a good time for me? Is this a good way for me to learn? Do I have good access to and comfort with computers? They cautioned again and again that learners need to be organized and self-directed. Many students commented that this was a very good way for them to learn, that they wouldn't have wanted to do it any other way. However, they did not know if it would be good for everybody or it would be good for their friends and so on. So they definitely recommended it, but with reservations. They said things like, make sure that you have developed independent study habits first. They had ideas that are probably wise. Take one class before you commit to a whole online program. And they also felt that not all content would lend itself necessarily to online education. They described certain courses, like heavy science courses, where maybe there's some benefit to seeing the instructor at the blackboard writing on the board. Fortunately, there is software that now allows that kind of thing in online classes. In fact, there's software that kind of supports increasing the connectiveness that students seem to want and need. There's two different ways you can provide material. Some of the methods are synchronous, which means they're set up at a set day and time, so they need to be scheduled. The downside of this is it reduces that flexibility piece that students highly value. So again, they need to be carefully scheduled. However, they include things such as webinars using software like Wimba or Illuminata, where you can actually see slides or video in real time. You can communicate back and forth in writing. Live chat is another method where you can communicate back in writing in real time. Faculty can set up online office hours and low-tech conference calls with groups of students are synchronous methods. There are also asynchronous methods, which do not have that time requirement. For visual learners, there's online software now that supports videos, such as Camtasia. For audio learners, you can use software called Empatica to add verbal comments to PowerPoint presentations. There's other software. PBWorks software allows one to set up wikis, which are similar to Wikipedia, where students work as a group and contribute to a product that they all work together with as a team and involves a lot of interaction and communication back and forth. And another method would be student web pages, where they can personalize the experience and create much less of a monk-like environment, if you will. So there is software out there now that supports some of the challenges that have presented in the past. In summary, employers can expect that online coursework provides a flexible, high-quality option for working RNs. Online studies are best for students who are organized, independent, and self-disciplined learners. Programs that include interaction and personal contact are advisable. Also, learners will need to develop skill in respectfully exploring divergent views. We learned many things in doing these two surveys, and now we are currently using that feedback to continually improve our online offerings. So I hope this is helpful to some of you who either teach online or are thinking about sending employees to online CEs or tuition programs. Thank you. Okay, the question is, what was the educational background of the students that I surveyed? The students went across a variety of programs. Some were BSN completion students, so they were RNs. Some were master's specialty students. A few were Doctor of Nursing Practice students, so they went across a variety of our programs. I do not believe if I had any truly pre-licensure students, it would have been one or two, because one of the criteria to participate was that the course had to be entirely online with no in-person component to it.
Just a comment, as somebody that went back to school after 25 years, that it was the best, I would say, format that seemed to work with myself, and this is in a graduate program, was a hybrid program, where mm-hmm. And that's been highly successful because I'm 6 months to go if I don't hang myself.
Right. That's great. It didn't come up in the surveys, but I 100% agree with you. That's a great idea.
Do we have any questions?
I have a question.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for your hard work on this presentation. My question is, do you ask the student's experience? Do they have online experience before, I mean, for your participant?
That wasn't actually specifically asked in the survey, whether they had had prior online experience before coming to our program. However, my feeling from knowing these students would be the majority did not, that they were new to online education.
Next question is, because I'm majorly teaching online. I know the course content has a lot of impact on students' their perception of online learning. So I'm wondering, are they all from the same course or are they from the different?
They would have been, the respondents to the survey would have been from multiple courses and multiple programs with multiple faculty. So it would have been quite varied.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.